there's more.
Oh, well, how could you step on that?
I thought the song ended. I got scared. Somebody hold
me. Hit the post, Mr. J.
Who would record an 11-second song? What a waste of time.
Beastie Boys? Who is this?
It is, right? Adam Derwitz? Is that his name?
Oh, now you're trying to show off.
Yeah?
Phil's trying to show off. Behind the music and on the music with Phil.
Yeah. I always liked on Behind the Music, they would set something up. They would say, you know, the Beastie Boys were one of the most influential bands of the 1990s, like that. And then they go, rock impresario, Jerry Aldini. And then he would tell his version of whatever they just said.
Steve Albini?
No, I think it was Jerry Aldini, wasn't it? I think.
Was it Steve Albini?
Yeah. But the Albini Boys.
Wasn't he a guest on your show once?
I think so.
I missed it.
Oh, I was sitting in for you.
I wanted so badly to meet him. Was he a nice man?
Why, so you can make fun of him to his face?
So I would go, rock impresario Jerry or
Steve Albini.
And then he'd go, that's the thing about the music industry. People love working with you, but no one knows your first name.
Well, everyone but you.
Black. Everyone but me.
His name is all over the place.
Always. No matter what they're talking about. It could be about Gregorian rhythmic chants, and they'll go, rock impresario Steve or Jerry Albini.
Speaking of rock impresarios, I'm watching the Eddie Money reality show still.
Yeah.
Oh, Bill. I love Eddie Money. I mean, he had a ton of hits.
Yeah, he did.
He wrote a new song for his wife, and it is, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you other than I know reality shows aren't real. I know that they set things up sometimes.
So they may have said to him, write a song that's not good.
Well, no, I think that's the real part.
Oh.
That he's still trying, like, Stick to Shaken and Two Tickets to Paradise. That's what people want to see when they come and see you.
The hits. Play the hits.
Exactly. Like, it'd be your own jukebox.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's how I know it's not real, because he's got a hot wife and a hot daughter, and they were lingerie shopping.
Yeah. That would happen, right? You can't accept that?
Oh,
if you had a daughter, that wouldn't be a part of your schedule every week? Let's go lingerie shopping. That's interesting.
It's just a hoot. That's all I can tell you, and I can't stop watching it. And they had Access TV, and listeners have said, wow, thanks for talking about that channel. If you like music, there are so many documentaries of all these great bands mm-hmm. that are amazing. But poor Eddie Money.
Yeah, I know. They've created a channel just for you. That's the perfect channel for you to watch.
It is. They should hook Steve Albini up with Eddie Money, and then he'd be good to go.
Yeah.
Or everybody. Jerry Aldini.
All those guys. They could all work together. I don't know if you had the same problem I had coming in here, but as Mary has been reporting, they've been shooting an episode of Chicago PD, not right in front of our building, but kind of in the area, you know, on the bridge, on Wacker. And a trip that normally would have taken me 11 minutes from where I parked to get here took a whole lot longer.
Because of closures.
Yeah. Everything was closed. No one was allowed across the street.
You couldn't walk down the median?
They were strongly advising against that because they didn't know when the shoot would everyone was like in their places ready for the shoot to start. And then, Steve, I had to drop your name. I go, I work with Steve Bertrand. Right. I need to get through. So they let me through finally. But they escorted me all the way from where the NBC Tower is, because that's where they were blocking it off. A guy with a vest who lives near you, by the way. He knew you.
Who doesn't?
Right.
I have a history.
Rock impresario Jerry Aldini. I had heard about Wendy Snyder, but I had never actually met
her. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, did you get his name?
He said, why is it so important that you get through? And I said, America needs to be entertained, sir. So I told him I worked here, and he goes, oh, I think I work, I live near your partner. So, you know, he knows of you.
All right. Well,
so maybe that opened the door.
I just broke through the set, and so look for me in an episode.
Yeah,
good for you. I like walking among the extras and trying to figure out which ones are actors and which ones aren't. You know?
Well, apparently in this scene, something bad happens on the bridge because I even said
you
to him.
You asked them?
Well, I said, are these people who are concerned because they think something bad is happening? Because remember a couple of years ago, there was either a helicopter crash or a plane crash that wasn't real. It was all part of the TV show.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if a lot of the people standing there thought something bad was happening on the bridge. And he goes, no, everyone you see is an extra. Which makes me wonder about the rest of my life. Where else?
Truman Show.
What if I'm going places and everyone I encounter is part, they're in on it?
That would be interesting.
That would be interesting. I know.
Wow.
I went out to CineSpace over the weekend.
Yeah, what did you, just for a tour?
Yeah.
And that's the studio where they shoot a lot of this?
They shoot all the Chicago. We were on the Chicago Med set, you know, in the emergency room and everything, and Empire and all of that. It was really, it's a huge complex out there.
It's the one way west, right, Steve?
It's in Lawndale, so it's on, I think it's on 26th or 25th.
Hmm.
No, 15th. It's 2600 West 15th or something like that. But, you know, Alex, the guy who runs it, has been on the show a couple times. They've got big plans for it out there. And it just was a really
good
thing
for the city.
To walk around.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Don't you think if Oprah wouldn't have shuttered down her studio, they probably would have used that? It would have made as much sense, right? Don't you think?
Use CineSpace or Oprah Studios?
They probably, my guess is they would have used a lot of Oprah Studio because it's perfectly located.
Yeah, I never saw hers, so I don't know, but probably, yeah.
It was impressive.
I mean, think they'd be shameless.
Bragging.
Nice
you didn't
job.
Go to kindergarten because you were double promoted. You're ambidextrous and you met
and
Oprah.
And I went to Oprah Studio.
You were on her show.
I was a guest.
What was the topic?
I hate you.
Young comedians.
Couldn't be on it now.
No. Old comedians that didn't quite match their expectations. That was.
I'm so jealous of you. There, I said it. Did you want me to say it?
I didn't know you at the time, or I would have invited you to come along and watch.
I swear to God, she would love me. If I could just meet her once, we would hang out.
Oh. I think she'd be scared.
No, she wouldn't.
I think she would be.
We're so alike.
Yeah.
What?
We're exactly alike.
Who's your Gayle King?
I don't really have
one. You got to have a Gayle King, or she won't even address you.
What? We are very alike.
Steve, I could hear wheels spinning and you putting a brake on them.
There's smoke coming out of his head.
Sentence involved candles in a tub. And I just...
I may be annoying to people sometimes.
No.
Would Jimmy Mack like be, you know, compared to Stedman?
Yes.
Yeah, that's
wouldn't
a good
he?
Point. No.
He wouldn't? No.
Who would want to be compared to Stedman?
Stedman's got a pretty cushy life going.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
Really?
Yeah.
What does he do?
He doesn't have to do anything.
Does anybody know anything about him? He's kind of like Prince Philip.
Minus the royalty.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, he is kind of like Prince Philip. What a great comparison.
Oprah would love me.
You think so?
That's so funny you think that. I think you are polar opposites.
I think you'd have to work your way up. Like, Steve Harvey would like me. Like, just build
I don't care if Steve Harvey
but
likes me.
You don't want
me.
To start out with Oprah. You got to go smaller and then build to Oprah.
Joan London.
Yeah, Joan London would.
She wouldn't like me at all.
Oh.
I think you're so much more genuine than I would think of Oprah.
I think Oprah, thank you for the compliment. And I think Oprah's very genuine.
Yeah, she is.
You don't think so, Steve?
I think you have to really get, how do I know, close.
She was more genuine. I'm thinking of the Oprah taking over from AM Chicago and that Oprah.
Oh, 1981?
Yeah. Oprah? We would have been best friends.
Oh, all right.
And then, you know, I could have, you know, bonded with her then, so now I could just reap the benefits and be the female Stedman.
How much time do you spend on this fantasy?
Probably too much.
A lot of time.
Yeah. I've talked about this for years.
I mean,
20 years.
Yeah.
To Bill, mainly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I try to be encouraging. I go, well, don't give up on this dream.
You've tried to book her for the show many years in the past on my birthday, and she wouldn't do it.
Not sad, because only one of you's met her then.
I know, that's what I mean. He just wants me to be jealous of him, and fine, yeah, I am. There, you happy?
Rock impresario Jerry Aldini. I was sure that Wendy and Oprah would have been great friends. It never panned out.
A terrible near miss.
So close. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I love Oprah there. I professed my love. Mary Vandeveld said, would Jimmy Mack want to be Stedman? I just got a text from Jim. Call me Stedman.
Yeah, why not? That's not a bad life to live, right?
He does business speaking and things like that.
Motivational stuff.
Well, Jim can't be Stedman then.
No.
I'm kidding.
He doesn't want to do motivational stuff?
No, not really.
No?
But Jim is ahead of his time. I don't know if you recall this, but when our former producer, Kevin Richter, got married, we were on our way to the wedding, and Jim put his watch on, and I said, oh, I haven't seen your watch in a while. Does it work? He goes, I don't know. Oh. Didn't look. It's just you get dressed up, you put a suit on, you put your watch on.
Yeah.
And now, according to Business Insider, men around the world are wearing broken watches.
Really?
Yep. So he was ahead of the curve. Men everywhere are wearing broken watches, according to the Wall Street Journal.
This is strictly for the look. You're not using it
jewelry.
For functionality at all.
Who? other than me, I really do look at my, I have a very nice watch and I still wear it because I love it and I do look at it.
Yeah.
But you, when's the last time you wore a watch? You don't need it. You just look at your phone.
It's been about 8 or 9 years since I've had a watch and I kind of miss it, but it's
well, then
become
wear one. You don't miss it that much.
It's become unnecessary.
But, you know, the kids love to wear the old watches. Like, you know, my mom recently passed away, and we found all my dad's old watches in one of her dressers. And I asked some of the boys, the grand boys, and they're like, yeah, we would love them.
Really?
And they were so excited to get a watch from my dad. And even though some of them don't work at all, you know, and the batteries wouldn't even work.
Yeah.
If you tried. So, but, yeah, they want the watches.
And think about it, because, you know, the Apple Watch is so popular.
Right.
Everyone and his uncle has one. And
my uncle just got one. So funny you say that, because he just bought one yesterday.
Congratulations.
Yep.
And it is pretty amazing when you think, you know, it tells you when you got a text. I don't want that distraction. It's bad enough that my phone buzzes and beeps.
Right.
I don't want it on my wrist.
Right.
But, Mary, you're saying they'd rather have the old-fashioned watches?
I don't know if they'd rather, but they sure love the nostalgia of having one of my dad's old watches. They're very
good for them.
Excited about it. And so, you know, we're having fun with it. It's kind of cool.
Are you a little surprised? I'm very surprised.
Yeah, I mean, some of my brothers and sisters are like, yeah, we'll just get rid of them. I'm like, no. And
save
then one
them.
Of my grandies, my nephews was there, and he said, no way. You know,
yeah.
We want those.
You want them.
According to this article, the watch represents something that mankind has been able to do through the forging of steel and gold and precious metal. I don't think that's why people are wearing it.
Why do you think?
It's just, it is.
Just the look?
Yeah.
The cool look.
In a world where we're constantly connected, something as simple as winding a mechanical watch every morning offers a moment of serenity. Almost every watch you don't have to wind anymore.
Right, right. Nearly all of them.
I mean, they have a battery in them.
Why don't we go back to the time? Remember when a conductor would have that thing?
Pocket watch?
On his, yeah, where it was on a chain.
That thing?
That, yeah, he would just pull it and he'd go, yeah, the old 418 coming in, you know, and he'd just put it back. Why
Isn't
don't we go back to that?
Isn't that what little pocket is on Levi's? Isn't that for a pocket watch?
A conductor's watch?
It's called a pocket watch.
It's for your change.
I think it is for change.
I don't know.
And Wendy, we've never needed change more than right now.
I hate
I
change. It is such a nuisance. I would spend the rest of my life never using cash ever again. I hate change.
Oprah's not going to pal around with you.
She did a show on that.
Oh, she did.
Yeah. Did
show
she? That? See, we're exactly alike.
It was about life change, but
yeah,
it was about change.
Still counts. Yep. We have things to give away today, right?
Oh, good point. Todd Rundgren tickets, and here's how we're going to do it. We just wanted to make it fair. Todd Rundgren is going to be performing, let me tell you. I'm still reeling from not going. I'm not reeling. I wanted to go see ELO last night, and the tickets were so darned expensive, times four, because we all wanted to go.
Yeah.
So I hope everybody had a good time. But go to see.
It was out of your price bracket?
I mean, last minute you can get seats, but then we wouldn't all sit together.
Yeah.
And it was like, I just, Jeff Lynne back with Electric Light Orchestra, I really wanted to go.
Where were they?
Rosemont.
Oh.
I know.
I'm sorry you missed it.
I am too.
Steve and I went. They gave us tickets.
It was outstanding.
What a great time it was.
The Rosemont Theater or the big arena?
Jasmine, wasn't last night fun?
Wow.
ELO?
It was amazing.
Yeah. Wendy, you missed quite an evening.
I mean, who knew they could still get those synthesizers?
Johnny the intern was there. He had a great time. They were just giving out tickets that you didn't go.
Wasn't it weird when Johnny went on stage?
Yeah.
I could not believe
that. Turned to stone.
Are you finished? pair of tickets to an unpredictable evening with Todd Rundgren, September 14th at Silver Creek Event Center at Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo, your entertainment escape. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com today. My husband Jim and my son Michael went to see Todd Rundgren like within the last 3 to 4 months and said it was absolutely incredible.
Oh,
so if you'd like to see Todd Rundgren, don't call now, but jot down this number, 312-981-7200. And when you hear a clip of a Todd Rundgren song, and it'll be pretty obvious,
mm-hmm.
when you hear the clip, just be the fifth caller, 312-981-7200. We'll do that today, tomorrow, and Friday.
All right.
Does that
That's
sound
easy.
Good?
That's very easy.
Listen for the clip. It's a song. It's not him talking. It's a very recognizable hit. You will understand it. Be the fifth caller. 312. Don't call now. Why
not
are they
yet.
Calling now?
Not yet.
You got to hear the song.
Yep.
So keep listening sometime before 11:30 today because White Sox baseball happens, correct?
Yep, absolutely.
All right, quick break and back with some news. It's Bill Leff. The Amazing Bill Left that I'm very jealous about.
What a show last night, Wendy.
And I'm Wendy.
Yeah.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Steve Bertrand, thank you so much for your fantastic news.
Really, great job.
Appreciate that.
Got to ask you a question. Do you think it's ever okay to check your partner's iPhone or Android phone and just look through it?
You asking me?
I'm asking everybody.
Oh, Steve, you start. You're taller than me.
Okay, no.
Have you ever looked at Sharon's phone?
Sharon listens to the show.
No, she does.
No, I never have. Why would I? Mean, because you're only, I mean, unless there's incredible suspicion or concern or something,
exactly.
You're only inviting disaster.
Boy, that's so true, Steve. Well said.
Thank you, Bill.
I have looked through Sharon's phone, Steve Weiss' phone.
And am I averting disaster?
I am not comfortable with what I've seen.
You know, last night I used to have my iPhone and my iPad connected, but somehow they got disconnected. So, My phone was charging on the counter. Jim was walking by, and I said, Michael's supposed to text us if he needs a ride. Will you look at my phone?
Yeah.
And he looked at one of my news alerts that came up, and I said, don't look through my phone. Just look for, you know, an answer from Michael.
Yeah.
And for a half a second, I'm like, oh, what is on you that screen?
Yeah.
But I honestly...
You set that up strangely, though. Like, don't just by saying, don't look through your phone would make him go, well, there's obviously something being hidden here.
No, it's not hidden, but, you know, I get all these news alerts that come up because I like to know what's happening all the time.
Right.
And I just wanted a quick answer. Do I have to pick Michael up? And he's like, oh, Bernie Sanders. I'm like, will you just please yes or no?
Yeah.
So that's what I said.
You
don't look
it
through
for
my phone.
Because of the time
element.
Yeah.
And then I thought about it. It's like, wow, he has my phone. I couldn't care less.
Yeah.
Well, I got nothing to hide.
Right. That's true. But I'm sure there are people out there who might have something to hide.
Yeah.
I don't want it found.
Or, you know, someone might send you a text that's for you and not for other people. And
like dirty ones?
No, just whatever. No. You know, it's just, I think I would respect someone else. I think that's personal space.
I agree with you. A lot of people seem to be snooping. They did a survey. Granted, this was back in 2014. I imagine it would be higher now because more people are using cell phones.
Right.
An antivirus software company named Avast did it. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 5 men copped to secretly checking their partner's phone. And here's another question I'm going to throw out at you. I don't use a passcode on my phone. Do you? You don't even know how to do it.
I don't know how to do any of that. That's why I don't look through my phone. I can barely operate my own phone. Well, I wouldn't know what to do with her phone.
Steve, do you have a passcode on your phone?
I do, yes. Well, everyone should.
Why, though? If I lose my phone, I'm going to call right away and, you know.
Right.
Well, someone could get your phone and get your credit card numbers. They could do all kinds of
things. What if you left it in the studio for 15 minutes? A lot of damage could be done in 15 minutes.
What's the harm in having an access code?
Because then I got to remember it. I am so sick of remembering everything.
Wait, mine's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's easy to
remember. That's a great one, Steve. Yeah.
Who would ever, I'll use
no
that
one could
too.
Crack that.
No, I don't think
that's
so.
That's brilliant. Is the passcode, every once in a while, my phone will do a thing where it shows me 6 digits to re-operate the phone. Is that the passcode, or is that something else?
Well, if you have to re-enter it, then you did it originally. Do you just skip that step? You don't even know.
Yes.
Do you have an iPhone?
Yes.
He blasted into the 2000s.
Yes.
I don't think I don't know of a 6-digit number for
it's
that.
It's 4.
The next time, no, I have one that it.
You have a knockoff.
Oh, maybe I do have a knockoff.
You have a J phone.
I do. I have the AT&T knockoff. That's what I bought. At the AT&T.
That's what it's called?
That's what it's called.
Can you hear me now?
Knockoff. Who's Steve, is that you?
But Jim has a passcode on his phone, but I don't even... I mean, I only do it because when I'm looking through pictures he's taken that I want to text to myself.
Yes.
If sometimes I wait too long, I'm like, could you put your code in there?
Oh.
But I have never...
Does it every time you use the phone? Does it ask for it every time?
Yeah, when you put it down and the screen closes.
Oh.
Mine's a thumbprint.
Oh, really?
It's a thumbprint, and that's how you access it.
Oh.
What if you burn your finger?
Well, there's a code. There's a backup code if your thumb is wet or something like that.
Oh.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
I just want to pick up my phone and use it. I don't really want to have to do this secret iSpy stuff.
No,
I'm with you, Wendy. I used to have it. Now I don't do it anymore.
You dropped your passcode?
I did.
I don't know. It was just
too
so annoying.
Too much of a hassle.
Yeah.
For me.
And I don't know. I check my husband's phone sometimes when he's driving, and he asks me to.
But you don't like scroll through emails and stuff.
No, so you're sitting about 15 feet from me. Next time you get up to go in the hallway, I'm going to look at your phone.
Hey, I don't care. I don't have anything to hide.
But all of us, or three out of the four of us, are in very solid relationships. So what if you were in a relationship where it's not that solid, where you just go, I need from time to time to check my phone to make sure everything's the way I think it should be?
I don't know that if I was in a relationship like that, I got to be honest with you, I don't think I'd want to know.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
The reason people do it, should we take a break and come back and tell you why?
Oh, that's a cliffhanger.
One in four women, one in five men. I bet it's higher than that. Again, this survey was done back in 2014.
Yeah, in a time that was a very trusting time back then.
No, but it's way worse now.
It is way worse.
Especially if there are mixed marriages with Republicans and Democrats or White Sox fans and Cubs fans.
Right.
Things like that.
Yeah, yeah,
Green Bay Packers and Bears fans.
Yep. We live in a dangerous time.
If Terry's phone is sitting there, and I know she listens as well, and there's no passcode on it, would you pick it up and just start looking through it?
No.
Nor would I.
No.
I have no desire to do that.
Even every once in a while, like, she'll get, you know, that pleasant tone, meaning a text has come in, and you see her phone will light up, and I'm like, I have no business even. I mean, I totally trust her. She totally trusts me. I don't need to read who's texting her.
Sometimes Jim goes, oh, who's that texting you? Yeah. Not even caring that much, but just if we're in the middle of a conversation,
right.
Oh, who's that? And it's like, I nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I said, who is that? No, he doesn't.
I think it's crazy.
Sorry, that's my fault, Bill. You were clearing, and I turned your microphone
Clear.
On.
Clear.
All right, get the paddles. Roger from Morris is going to see Todd Rundgren live in action at Silver Creek Event Center at Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo, September 14th. It's going to be a great show. Your entertainment escape is the Silver Creek Event Center at Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com. You can get them today. You can wait till tomorrow, because, again, when you hear a snippet of a Todd Rundgren song, just be the fifth caller, 312-981-7200. And I think we're doing that again Friday.
We are.
Does it have to be Todd Rundgren? Can you do Utopia?
No, it has to be.
That's a good call, but no,
I
we're sticking a solo.
It has to be
I
Todd
like
Rundgren.
Set Me Free. I want Set Me Free.
Oh.
Yes, they Michael and Jim just went and saw Rundgren. I can't remember where he was, but they said it was just an unbelievable show. He did some Utopia songs and some solo stuff.
I love Todd Rundgren.
I'm a big fan as well. You want a pair of tickets? Because you got to be the fifth caller when you hear a
What's the number?
312-981-7200.
Will you play Set Me Free tomorrow and then I call? Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Maybe we can arrange it.
You don't think listeners, though, will go, wait, Steve from the newsroom won those tickets?
Well, we won't say from the newsroom.
We'll just say
Steve.
From Chicago.
You know
Steve from
Steve's?
Chicago.
There's a lot of Steves out there.
Yeah.
And I am looking at ELO tickets. I guess the reason I didn't go last night is the show wasn't last night. It's tonight.
You would have been they would have said, can you help us set up?
No lines.
Can I just ask you, listen, I'm not cheap, and I know that you have to pay for things in life, but the tickets that are available that are of decent seats are $461 a ticket. There are four of us. Is there anyone you guys would spend that amount of money to go see?
No.
I mean, seriously. And these tickets were way more expensive. There were like $3,000 tickets.
That's crazy. Now, are you saying it's the arena and not the theater?
It's the Allstate Arena.
Okay.
That seems really high.
I mean, I love ELO.
Oh, my God, I love
ELO. We've been talking about ELO, but they haven't been relevant sort of in 30 years.
But that's the big news, because Jeff Lynne split. Now Jeff Lynne's back, and now it's Jeff Lynne's ELO.
Yeah.
Because we interviewed ELO Part 2.
ELO Part 2, right. It was everybody from them except their front man, except Jeff Lynne.
And I love Jeff Lynne. I think he has one of the best voices in rock and roll. I love the Traveling Wilburys. And he's back in action. That's why it's the big hoopla, Steve.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I do too, but that's a lot of money.
I know.
Have a GoFundMe page.
No, listen, and there are people that paid
you
good money for these
page.
Tickets. But I asked you off the air, like, is there anyone, like, you adored Don Rickles.
Yeah.
If you had to pay that for one ticket, imagine
today?
Times four if you brought your family.
Right.
Which I would love to see the whole Left family.
That'd be
you
fun
and the
to
two
bring
girls.
The girls to see Don Rickles. They love Don Rickles.
I mean, is there any way on earth you would pay that?
No. That's too much.
I don't know
that's
what the cutoff is, but it's like, that's a weekend vacation.
Mm. All right. right. So because we're playing with the element of time and reality, if it were the Beatles, I would say yes to the Beatles.
I don't know. Even if Led Zeppelin got back together,
That's still a lot of money,
wouldn't spend
right?
this.
Yeah.
I know. What kind of a poser fan am I? It's just unbelievable to me.
And you wouldn't consider maybe just you and one of the boys or Jimmy?
No,
you
we all want to go.
All four
we
of
all
you must go.
Listen, when you find a group that your whole family loves
yeah.
and can sing along to.
Right. Well, it's like my family yeah, with but... Kid and Play.
Like, I want to go back to college, too, but I don't expect my kids to bring me. I mean, they can't do everything.
That's unrealistic, Steve.
Right.
I don't know. When your 15-year-old says, Mom, can you get tickets to ELO like 6 months ago? And I said, I'll
yes.
try.
I say, yes, I can get them, and I'll tell you all about the show.
Yes, right.
Okay, well, there is no way you'd do that, Mr.
What's
I don't
your,
even know what you are.
What's your wall? Like, where?
I don't know.
What, like, what would be the price if they said to you, you know, even though these tickets are listing at 430-something, 460-something, we'll give them to you for this price. What's your breaking
bucks.
Point? $100 per? Or total.
I mean, God, when we used to go to concerts, it was like $35. Plus, this is $461 plus fees.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
throw in a T-shirt, that's another $100.
Yeah, that's too much.
It just is.
Right, right.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
I gave Justin Kaufman two tickets for his birthday. I should have given them to you. I wasn't thinking clearly.
You know, you were being a smart butt, and you were saying that you and Bertrand went, and everything was great, and
yeah.
Johnny the intern went.
Yeah.
Guess who's going tonight?
Johnny, our intern, is going.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's going.
Oh, I love
he really
it.
Is.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Hey, Johnny, you got an extra?
But how do you pay for
Bring
tickets?
Wendy.
You're an intern.
Interns make a lot of money now, Wendy. It's not like it used to be. He makes crazy amounts of money. We went boat shopping yesterday after the show. He's getting a pontoon boat to bring him to work every day.
Oh, good golly, Miss Molly. All right. Well, checking your phones, can I tell you why people do it?
Please.
And this is pretty obvious. There was a survey that was done back in 2014, and 1 in 4 women, 1 in 5 men cop to secretly checking their partner's phone. Here's why people do it, according to certain marriage therapists.
Because they don't trust them, right? Nobody
trusts
anybody. Yeah, of course.
You know, as you might expect, this kind of behavior often points to a lack of trust in the relationship. Here's another reason. There's a lack of communication or problems with intimacy. Doesn't that fall into the trust umbrella?
Yeah. You got to trust your partner, Wendy.
I do.
You have to.
Checking a partner's phone has become easier than being vulnerable and sharing how you're really feeling when you feel compelled. And that's why you feel compelled to check the phone.
You got to trust.
You got to talk.
You got to talk. You got to trust. You know, my wife's always going out of town with longshoremen. I wouldn't let her go if I didn't trust her. That'd be silly. So a lot of conventions they go to.
Here's another reason.
Them.
Partners are insecure, suspect there may be infidelity. Again, this all is under the trust umbrella. That's
it
really
is.
The only reason.
Yes.
If you don't trust your significant other.
Then you have nothing. Right?
Right.
You got to have trust.
Miles and miles and miles
of trust. Right.
Is it
I
ever?
Bet ELO don't do that tonight. Johnny, call us if ELO sings that song. All right. They'll call us.
I just don't like you anymore. Is it ever okay? The long and short of it, according to this article, where was it? Huffington Post?
Mm.
No.
It's never okay.
It's really not.
Oh.
It's a violation of your partner's privacy. That's what Bertrand said. It's a breach of trust. Not to mention, it's often unproductive. You might find nothing and then feel like a jerk for snooping.
I bet.
You might find something really teeny tiny and innocent and blow it out of proportion.
Yeah. Right.
You know, people take texts the wrong way sometimes. That's why you have to use emojis.
Yeah.
Imagine if you see something
you
concerning Terry and a longshoreman.
Yes.
And you would, like, fly off the handle.
Right. Well, I've learned not to. But I bet for the novice out there, it could be a lot of handle, whatever you said.
Handle flying off.
Yeah, handle flying offing.
Or you might actually find something incriminating, but then you have to ask yourself, was this really the most honorable way of getting the information? And what do you do with that information? Say you find something on your partner's phone, how do you admit, like, how do you question them and not admit that you snooped?
Sure. But wouldn't you also say that there, over the years, there have been other elements like this, like Visa bills, you know, like that kind of thing where you go through the statement every month and just go, all right, I'm curious about what this is for and what's that for. What were you doing there then?
Who asks that?
Who's this target guy?
Why are you giving this target guy so much money? I would imagine that over the years, though, people, if you're looking for something to be suspicious about, you go back and you check those kind of records. But if you trust the person you're with, I do.
And Jim gets things together for our income tax, so he's like, what's your login for Discover? And,
right.
And, you know, I check his stuff, too, and never once has either of us said, what is this charge for so-and-so?
Yeah.
It's like, granted, we do have separate bank accounts.
I know.
And that bothers you.
No, I think it's funny. Do you remember this? This happened when I was a kid. There was a hotel that sent a bunch of people in the area thank you cards. It was a new hotel, and they sent them thank you cards for using their hotel. But they sent out the wrong list. They were supposed to send out a list of people who had actually been at the hotel, but they somehow purchased a list of people who were never at the hotel. But we got one at my house.
Ooh,
you know, just want to thank you for visiting our hotel. Hope to have you as a guest again in the future.
The Rainbow Inn or something.
Next time, stay longer.
Yes. You only stayed for 3 hours. What's up with that?
Three hours.
I hope you had a good time. But
I needed a nap.
It became a big story in the news because so many people, their relationships crumbled.
That was double entendre, by the way, Bertrand.
Of course it was.
People would be in trouble. That would be. Granted, maybe I would question, like, what's going on here?
Yep.
All right. Well, in some relationships, both partners may mutually decide to give each other free rein to go through each other's phones. But you have to set the parameters in advance and agree upon them. This arrangement thing might work well for some couples. That said, wanting to maintain some privacy even while in a relationship is perfectly reasonable and even healthy.
There's no reason to ever go through someone's phone if they're not there.
Right. Agreed.
I mean, I've given my phone to Sharon and said that, you know, she knows the passcode and like she's looking for a picture or something, but if she wasn't in the room or the house, that there's no way.
All right, just a quick something to ponder. Do these same rules apply to your kids?
What, you can't check the kids?
Can you, is it okay to go through your kids' cell phones?
You know what? I don't do that either, but I do follow them on Instagram and Snapchat, and I just kind of keep track of things.
Yeah.
And here's the weird thing. They were offended. Well, my 19-year-old is an adult. The 15-year-old was offended that I wasn't following him on Snapchat.
Oh.
So I took that as a good thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I'll follow
you.
But they
could have secondary accounts, couldn't they, if they wanted to?
I found those too.
Oh, you did find those. Okay. You're ahead of the game then.
Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you right now, I would never say, let me check your cell phone. If there was something that I questioned, I would ask them and expect them to tell me the truth.
Huh? That's the right way to do it. Yeah.
Would you check your kids?
Mm-mm.
I don't want to do that. Mm-mm. I hated when my mom used to go in my room. Thank God it was messy and she could never find anything.
Yeah.
Invasion of privacy.
It is an invasion of privacy. It's what it is. All right, a quick break, some news, then Dr. John Duffy. That's all ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And every other week we are joined by our show psychologist. Thank God, because boy, do we need him. He is Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting, relationship expert. He's written a book, The Available Parent, which is awesome. And you have a podcast that you co-host with your wife, Julie, and it's called Better. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Your intro is getting longer and longer each time.
We don't have any time left to talk to you now, John.
Well, it's great to be here.
You've accomplished so many things that there's no time to chat with you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Bill, we were discussing this with, I can't remember his name, Reverend...
The Reverend from the church in Des Plaines the other day.
Who survived that Aeromexico, whatever, the airplane crash, where everyone survived. Over 100 people survived. There were injuries.
Yeah.
And you had a great question.
All right. So what I would say, John, I think you'll agree with me, that is the ultimate near-death experience. You're in an airplane that's crashing. So in your head, you say to yourself, and he copped to this, my life is about to end.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we normally see from cases like this is people come out of this with a new appreciation of life. All of a sudden, after a near-death experience, they go, wow, life is fantastic.
Right.
You know? Why does it take something like a near-death experience for us to realize this?
It doesn't always, but it often does. And every near-death experience like this that I've ever worked with, there has been some life-altering event that happens afterwards. In other words, I'm going to change my job. I'm going to do something that is more meaningful. This relationship isn't fulfilling. And I think part of it is that you realize for certain you're working on borrowed time.
Oh.
And unless that happens to us, we're not really fully consciously aware of that. But the reverend who survived the crash,
yeah,
he had a moment where he realized, oh, this could be it. Am I satisfied with what's happened so far? Or
yeah,
do I want to change the narrative going forward?
Yeah.
How do you change that narrative without having a near-death experience?
Yeah. So,
because that's the magical question, isn't it?
In a weird way, therapy, in the abstract, is creating the sense of a near-death experience. It's kind of like creating the idea of what would you do if you knew your time was limited? You know what I mean? Like, you know, what changes would you make if you knew? And
those are tough.
It's a really tough question.
That guarantees you a repeat customer because you can't figure that out in one session.
It's really, really difficult. And in fairness, the near-death experience is complicated by the trauma of the near-death experience, whereas therapy usually isn't. And the trauma sometimes creates enough energy to kickstart something. You know what I mean?
I can see where that would happen.
Therapy, it's tough to do, to create that energy.
And I imagine there needs to be some kind of, you know, cool if you don't need it, but if you survive that plane crash, which everyone did, I can only imagine that they have to seek some professional help afterwards because, wow, is that post-traumatic stress?
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, so that's one thing. In reading about that story, that's one thing that worries me. And having worked with a number of people who've been close to death in one way or another, if you don't seek help, that PTSD is virtually a certainty because no matter what, a near-death experience, even if all sorts of good things come out of it, is a traumatic experience.
John, Father Sanchez was obviously already a religious man. He was the pastor of a church. But Wendy and I were discussing before and after we had him on as a guest the other day that so many people, when you're coming down to what you think may be the very end of your life, all of a sudden find religion. What is that all about? That's like buying insurance at the last second, isn't it?
I think to some extent it is. To some extent, it's digging a little deeper than you normally would dig into your own psyche to think about. So normally we live this day-to-day life and we don't really think about how we think. In those moments, and sometimes it just takes moments for a lot of people to recognize, oh, this is what I really feel. This is what I really believe. Yes, there's an element of I want an insurance policy. I'm mm-hmm. so sorry for everything I've ever done, right? Mm-hmm. There's that moment. But there's also this kind of, people describe this kind of peaceful feeling that comes over them where they feel like, this is death, but this doesn't feel like the end somehow. It feels like there's something next.
Yeah.
You know, it's very consistent that people describe that.
Yeah.
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 We have talked about this. Bill was raised Catholic but didn't really buy into any of it.
Yeah.
And you said that you know yourself well enough to know if you were at that moment. I thought maybe you'd turn to what you learned, not that you believed it back then, but that's what you were exposed to. And you might all of a sudden go, you know what? Maybe this will comfort me a little bit, but you're pretty sure you wouldn't.
I don't think I would.
But how can you predict
there's no
how
way
you're going
to
act?
But I don't think you say I would go to what I learned, which was phonics. I was really well. I loved phonics.
Well, you were hooked on it,
and that would keep you occupied until you know your imminent death.
I would find murmur diphthongs to keep me busy as the plane crash. I don't think in those what could have been my last moments, I don't think I would go that route. But like Wendy said, I guess you don't know unless you're in that situation, right?
What people tell me is unless you're in that situation, you really don't know. And that situation isn't what you think it is. So a lot of us think, wow, I had this turbulent moment on an airplane, or I had this car crash where I was hit from behind. That was a near-death experience.
Yeah.
People who've really been there, I worked with a woman years ago who was held at gunpoint, and a coworker was shot while she was held at gunpoint. And she said that was a near-death experience because I was certain I was next to die, and I felt different than anything I've ever felt before. You know, I felt a bit of transcendence that I'd never really experienced before, and I considered my life in a different way. And she said it felt like I had all the time in the world, even though this all happened in an instant. I felt like I had all this time to consider what was going on in my psyche.
Right. Wow.
And, you know, if someone next to her got shot, then mm-hmm. you have a whole other is it survivor's guilt or something like that?
Because
no one perished in this plane flight, so no one's going, oh, that could have been me that died. That's a whole different thing, isn't it?
And that's a whole other element of the trauma. I worked with a man who maybe 20 years ago died swimming in the lake here he survived, but his two best friends passed away swimming right out here. And he would say he feels a little bit like almost omnipotent, like nothing could possibly take my life, but that survivor's guilt owns him every single moment of the day.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it's virtually constant.
Horrible. All right, Dr. John Duffy is our guest. We'll continue this conversation in just a little bit. Just texted me, Wendy, and said thank you for mentioning her on the air.
You're welcome, Pam.
Dr. John Duffy's here, a friend of Pam's.
Hi, Pam.
Talking about a whole bunch of things. What else, John? What else were we to discuss with you?
So here's something that I came across. I've been researching a new book on parenting teenagers, and I came across research on kindness, which kind of makes us all roll our eyes a little bit. But there's a couple things I learned that I think are kind of conventional wisdom, but might be worth mentioning nonetheless.
Sure, of course.
The main one was, this surprised me a little bit, if people describe you as kind, you are likely to live about 2 years longer than somebody who is described as unkind.
Why would that be?
It's better for the ticker, they say, better for the heart.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess you can kind of see that. It makes more sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of, there's a little conventional wisdom in there. That does make sense. But there's also a couple things that surprised me on measures of success, including financial success, relationship satisfaction, overall life satisfaction.
Yeah.
People who are described as kind tend to rate higher on all of these scales.
Yeah.
The distinction they make is this doesn't mean just a nice person, because that can be real passive. They describe kindness as kind of this active, I go out of my way to make other people feel good over the course of my day. That's my go-to part of my personality.
Yeah.
Think about it, though. When you're kind to someone, you have made that person happy. You yourself kind of feel good and proud about yourself for doing a good deed. When you fight with someone, your blood pressure elevates. I mean, it's way worse for you to be mean than kind.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
It's like paying it backwards and forwards, because you benefit, you know, the other person benefits. And one thing I was thinking about the other day is that a lot of the stimuli we are taking in these days via screens and each other is real harsh, not particularly gentle. And so this is not a bad time for a little bit of a kindness revolution, you know, because we, I think, could all benefit from kind of gentler words toward
you know, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Isn't the greatest compliment you can ever get, like if somebody says about your child, boy, your kid is so polite, they're so kind. I'd rather have that given to me about one of my children than anything. That's just the best thing to hear, isn't it?
It is. And one funny thing about that, Bill, is that I will tell that to parents on a daily basis, and they'll be like, really?
I'm one of those parents.
My child?
Wow, so good to hear, because I haven't seen that yet.
We've talked about this in the past, too. You know, our behavior, and not just kids, adults, too, I think is worse at home, because we're all comfortable with one another. If there's ADHD involved, if there's anxiety or depression, you hold it together all day long at school or work, and then you come home and kind of let loose a little bit. So there is nothing far greater, you're right, than when somebody, you know, maybe your kid was at their house, and it's like, your kid is so polite.
Yeah.
And it's shocking. You're not shocked, because your life's perfect. And you're ambidextrous, and we're double promoted. And met Oprah.
You left out Illinois State tennis champion.
Oh, that's right. I got to add that.
On there, too.
But really, it is shocking.
When somebody says that, that's better than saying how smart they are, how beautiful they are, whatever. You just go, I guess we're doing something right, I guess.
I think for most any parent, if they're being honest, that would be the metric that they most want to gauge their parenting by. Yeah,
yep.
For sure.
Absolutely. But on the negative side of it, please hear me out on this.
Yeah.
I always say, no good deed shall go unpunished.
I'm starting to believe you.
I hate to admit that, but just as you walk through life, you go, it's kind of true. Every time you do something, you go out of your way to help somebody, it comes back to bite you. What are your thoughts on that?
This actually crossed my mind, Bill, while I was reading this. I was thinking, wow, this is not the time to be soft. And I think maybe the distinction we can make is that kindness doesn't necessarily denote that.
Mm.
In other words, it doesn't have to be that it's an unpunished good deed. It could be just like, I'm going to be kind to you. That doesn't mean I'm not going to push for what I want. That doesn't mean I'm not going to get a good deal out of this discussion.
Right.
It means I'm going to be really civil.
Yeah.
In the course of it.
Yeah.
And because I think kind people, by and large, can win, even in like business negotiations and things like that. It doesn't mean you're not strategic. And intelligent.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Right,
and it doesn't even mean you don't have kind of a shark-like fighting spirit. I think you can have all of that and still be pretty kind.
It can all coexist together somehow. You gotta find the balance.
Yeah, because I do think you're right. I think I agree with Bill as well, Wendy.
But all right, so listen to this. So, like, say you let someone in on traffic. Someone's trying to merge and you wave them in, and then all of a sudden somebody rear-ends you. That's what you're talking about. It's like, you know, it didn't take anything really out of you, but it's supposed to be good karma's rewarding you, but sometimes it's the opposite.
Yeah, it doesn't balance out the way it should.
Yeah, I know.
It's just a matter.
I know exactly what you mean. I know that happens. I am reluctant to attribute too much to that because I think there's an element of hopelessness if we just decide,
I guess
that's the deal then. I guess we need to be ruthless. You know, that's our only way of being.
Right. Yeah.
But even today, I was running late. I forgot something. So I ran back in the house to get it. And then on my way to work, there was an accident that happened maybe a minute to 2 minutes before I got to this particular intersection. So then I keep thinking, boy, there's a reason I forgot something. Or thank God I'm flighty and forgot something. Or that would have been me involved in that accident.
Right. And I think we just kind of organically, we look for the karmic in the ordinary. You know what I mean? I mean, because we're always searching for meaning. I think, you know, our previous discussion suggests that too, that we're looking for something that means something that's going to direct our lives a little bit.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Everyone's always dumping on millennials. That's the thing to do now is if something goes wrong, you blame it on the millennial people.
Of course.
But really, I have found them to be pleasant and kind and polite more than you would ever imagine. So what's going on there?
I agree entirely.
Why do they get such a bad rap?
I have no idea.
Right.
What is it, crotchety old people that are jealous of their age? What is it?
I think there's an element of that. I think part of it is the optics of these kids. They're taking their selfies. They're looking down at their phones. They don't know how to hold a conversation anymore. Couldn't be less true. I think it's kind of lazy thinking on the part of the older generations about young people. They're also briefly exposed to so much at such a young age, just stimuli, news, all sorts of things. Our young kids know more about what's going on in the world than young kids have ever known.
Yeah.
And they're a little overwhelmed by that, but they also have empathy that kids didn't have a generation ago, right?
Yeah.
So true.
And older people who see a kid on a cell phone, they automatically dismiss them and say, oh, look, that's a millennial on their cell phone, but they don't take the time to have a conversation with them where they would realize, wow, they really can have a conversation with someone.
Yep, and sometimes on the cell phone, they're communicating with somebody, and older people forget how much time we spend on cell phones, too. You know, like, so
and they're way quicker than us.
Yeah, they're way better.
Yep. John, if people want to hear you, they go to
drjohnduffy.com is kind of a clearinghouse for anything about me.
Good. Very good.
You're
great to see you.
Quick.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks, guys.
That's Dr. John Duffy. A quick break and then more things. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.